Okay, this morning will be in chapter 35 of Job. Again, Job means what? The hated and the persecuted. If you do the right thing, you got to know what's coming. They hated Jesus and persecuted him for telling the truth. See, humanity doesn't like the light. They like the darkness. Okay? So you got to know what this is all about. This is about you and your life, what goes on in your life when you try to do right. I'm not talking about the right according to man's standards. I'm talking about God's standards. Let me read the chapter and we'll start from there. Elihu spoke moreover and said, "Thinkest thou this is to be right, that you said, my righteousness is more than God's? For you said, what advantage will be to thee, and what profit shall I have if I be cleansed from my sin? I will answer you and your companions with you. Look to the heavens and see, and behold the clouds which are higher than you. If you sin, what do you against him? Or if your transgressions be multiplied, what do you do unto him? If you be righteous, what givest thou to him? Or what receivest he from your hand? Your wickedness may hurt a man as you are, and your righteousness may profit the son of man. By reason of the multitude of oppression, they make the oppressed to cry. They cry out by reason of the arm of the mighty. But none says, where is my God? Where is God my maker? Who gives songs in the night, who teaches us more than the beasts of the earth, and makes us wiser than the fowls of heaven. There they cry, but none gives answer, because of the pride of the evil men. Surely God will not hear vanity, neither will the Almighty regard it. Although you say you shall not see him, yet judgment is before him. Therefore trust you in him. But now, because it is not so, he has visited in his anger, yet he knows it not in great extremity. Therefore does Job open his mouth in vain. He multiplies words without knowledge." Do you know who Elihu's talking about? Us. See, this book about Job is about us. Who is Elihu? Elihu speaks of Christ. He's the one that come to set everything right. Just like the three men in Daniel that was in the fiery furnace and the fourth one was there. This is the fourth man that showed up here in our life. And who is that? Christ. And he said, Elihu continued and said, "Thinkest thou this to be right, that you said, my righteousness more than God's?" Do you remember him saying that? In chapter 33, verse 9, Job made this statement. "I am clean," or "I am pure. Without rebellion, I am pure. Neither is there evil in me." You know, I've heard people say that in this earth. There was a lady I particularly remember. We ministered to her one night in her home. She asked us to come over, and we spent several hours there, and this woman would scream and cry, "I have never sinned in my life. I've never done anything wrong." She really believed it. She honestly believed it. Really? She said she was saved. I said, "What's the purpose of being saved if you're already in perfection? I mean, you know, you're not getting things together here, you know. What did you need to be saved for? Why do you even talk about it if you're already in perfection?" And I finally convinced her that there was a reason why the lamb was slain. You know, that was for our sin. So she finally got it. And where she's at, I don't know. Went back to Arizona or New Mexico or someplace out in there now. So that's okay. He said, "Do you think this is right that you said, my righteousness is more than God's?" Verse 2. "Because you said, what advantage will it be to you, and what profit shall I have if I have from my sin?" He said, what good would it do to me to get saved? What good would it do to me to have everything fixed? He said, "I'm already perfect." Do you think it's right for someone to say that? Not in the manner that Job spoke it in. There's a manner of saying we're perfect because God said when we were created we were very good. In Ezekiel he said we were perfect in all the ways when we were created. Even in 1 John, John wrote and said that we know all things. Job was speaking in pride and arrogance. But in humility and by the Spirit of God when we understand these things, there is perfection in each one of us. If we understand it's not my flesh but it's my spirit within me. That's why he took like that thing you handed me, Tom, before service about all those things, the people had their flaws in it. God used, every vessel he used was imperfect in their flesh. Everyone was perfect in their spirit. Why did he say after David, when David did all these wrong things, he's a man after my own heart? He was talking about his spirit. He was talking about his spirit man was after his spirit. He wasn't worried about this stuff here. This is all, this is going to die and go back to the dust from where it came from. Read the book. Solomon was the wisest man in the world. He said, when we die, the dust goes back to the earth. The spirit returns to God who gave it. Okay? That's what it's about. Getting back to God with the knowledge of God and understanding. Getting this mind of Christ in us that we understand what God is talking about. Okay? Verse 4, he says, I will again, the word again should be here. It's left out of the King James translation. I will again answer you and your companions with you. Okay? Look to the heavens, or look at the skies, what should say, and see and behold the clouds which are higher than you. If you sin, what do you do to him? What do you do to him? If I sin, if I do something the church world says is bad, I do this, I drink, I smoke, I do all these things that the church world points at, don't do. If I do that, what do I damage God? I can't damage God. Come on. If sin would damage God, God would be dead. Because the world reeks of sin. It's full of transgression and rebellion. God is impenetrable. You can't penetrate God with wrong things. The only way you walk boldly into that throne room is by the Spirit of God and realize that that throne room is not in a geographical location in the earth, but it's within you in your spirit. There's how you walk into the throne room, and nothing can go in there by carnal knowledge. It has to be by spiritual understanding I can walk into His presence. He said, or if you rebel, if your rebellion is multiplied, what do you do to Him? What do you do to God if you rebel? Let me ask you a question. If I am a drug addict and I take drugs, what did I do to harm God? You harm yourself. Only thing God set these things down for under the law was to show us a pattern. You don't understand what you're doing to yourself. If we do these things and violate these laws God set up, it isn't hurting God. It's hurting humanity. It's hurting us. We're self-destructing. And God's trying to show us we don't understand what the repercussions of what we're doing. It's like throwing a rock in the water and watching the ripples go out. We don't think there's any ripples when we throw things into our water. We don't think, well, it don't make any difference. It's just me. How can I not affect the rest of humanity when I am a part of humanity? See? I am part of that humanity, so I cannot do anything. People say, well, I can go commit suicide and ain't nobody else's business mine. No, when you kill yourself in suicide, you're affecting the rest of your family and their friends and their family. They're all, you're grieving and suffering over what you did. See, you can't do anything that doesn't affect humanity in one way or another, good or evil, one way or the other.
Well, that's the same thing with drug addiction or alcoholism. That's a family disease.
Sure it is. Not one person, the whole family. And we are the family of God. It affects the whole family when something's wrong. Just like he talks about the body of Christ. You know, we're all one body, many members, one body. If my finger is hurting or my toe is hurting, my whole body is affected by it, isn't it? That's the same pattern. Verse 7, if you are righteous, what do you give to him? He said, okay, now we got past the sin part and the transgressions and the rebellions. Now, let's just say if you're just Miss Goody Two-Shoes or Mr. Two-Shoes, if you're just goody-goody, what are you adding to God? Someone answer that one for me. Same answers you give to the first one. You didn't give anything to God. You're going to make God more righteous because you do something? That's absurd. God is perfect in all of his ways. And he needs us to make him anything? I don't think so. Well, sure, but God don't need it. See, this is not a volunteer army. This is a drafted army. God chose who he wants. And people don't realize the responsibility, the awesomeness of being chosen by God to know this truth. How many people do you think really, now, to say they know the truth, there's a lot of people say, well, I know this truth, but if they knew it, they'd proclaim it, if they knew it in here. They have an intellectual understanding that it says that, but they don't know it inside, or they'd proclaim it. How many people do you think on the face of the earth they can proclaim the truth of God? Give me a percentage. I'd say it's 10% or less. Now, you look at the awesomeness of being chosen and to be in that 10%, that first fruit, it's 10%. That's why I say that figure, you know, roughly that 10%. So if there's 10%, roughly, how many people do you think the multitudes that don't have a clue what's going on? What do you think the awesomeness is to be chosen in that percent? Because you can't earn it. This is something God did on His own. He chose who He wants. He said He chose you in Him before the foundation of the world in Ephesians. He chose you before the in Him before the foundation of the world. Before you were ever created, He said, that's the seed I'm going to use. That doesn't do with what you were doing. You hadn't done anything. So we can't give anything to God. And the rest of verse 7 says, and what does He receive from you or your hand? What could God receive from your hand? Nothing. Well, see, I've heard people say, well, He receives money. I give God money. No, you don't give money to God. You give money to a ministry or a church or a person, and that person uses it. That's what God set up for that person or ministry to survive on. That's their labor, for their labor. That's all. See, but you're not really giving it to God. You're giving it to another brother or another sister. We're not really given to God, are we?
It's already His in the first place.
Thank you. It's all His. See, the Old Testament says He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Well, I'm going to tell you, He owns more than that. He owns every hill and every cow. He owns them all. He'll take care of it. Your wickedness may hurt a man, He says, as you are, and your righteousness may profit the son of Adam. The son of man, the son of Adam. So he said, what's going to happen here is this. What you do can hurt a man or it can help a man. But it doesn't have anything to do with helping or hurting God, because God is beyond being helped or hurt. See? And it's an arrogance and pride in humanity that thinks that we can help God. That's saying God is weak and fallible. God's not weak. He's not fallible. He doesn't need our strength, does He? All He asks us to do is one thing, to love Him and obey Him. That's all He ever asks for, two things, love and obey. If you love Him, you'll obey Him. Just obey and love Him. That's all you got to do. All these other things that everybody tells you you got to do, scratch them off, forget them. That's condemnation and guilt. That's what I call doo-doo, and everybody knows what doo-doo is, and doo-doo don't belong in the temple. You and God can work this thing out because God's your maker. Don't go back to a man because man didn't create you. God did. You don't take your Mercedes to a Volkswagen dealership to get it fixed. Take it to a Mercedes dealer. God created you. Go back to God to get fixed. You don't come to a man or a person. You come to God to get it. Now, God might use vessels. He does use vessels. He said He does. But still, it's God ultimately that does the work. The person that He sends to use through to work through, that's just a vessel. Okay? But ultimately, the manufacturer or the creator is the one that fixes the creation. Verse 9, by reason of the multitude of oppressions, they make the oppressed to cry. They cry out by reason of the force or the strength of the mighty. He's talking about the oppressed of the earth. And you know, He's not talking about the just wicked people doing wicked things. Yeah, that's part of it. But God's talking about something on the other side here. Let's look at the spiritual people, the people that is trying to come to know God. And you know how many people's in churches this morning that are seeking God and all they're hearing is humanistic views? They're not hearing about God. They're not hearing about how much God loves them, and in spite of their faults, God loves them anyway, unconditionally, and He's going to straighten it out because He already paid the price for it. Just wait on God and He'll take care of it. You don't have to run out there and try to perform something, jump through a hoop, and make all these promises to God to get something done. Wait on God, and God will take care of it. He gave everybody a brain, and I am 100% sure He encouraged you to use that brain. Use that thing. Don't set it back in the corner and let somebody think for you. You need to think for this. If God give you a brain and give you a life to live, you should live your life and not live somebody else's life. And in the church world, they want you to be like a bunch of penguins, like that March of the Penguins movie. Everybody look like that and march right behind that line, and wherever they go, you go. No, God calls us all to a different beat. Everybody has their own course to walk. And it says in Proverbs, it says, He orders the steps of a righteous man. He orders the steps of the righteous man where he goes. He doesn't have a choice. You know what? Don't want to be. I don't want to be my own person. I don't want to be my own choice. I don't want to do what I want to do. I want to do what my Father, because I love Him so much that I want to do. There's nothing pleases me more than do what He wants me to do. That's the greatest thing I can do. And I mean, it's such a pleasure. It's no more labor, but it's a labor of love, and there's no strain in that. There's no effort. Do you think I strain? Does anyone recognize me as straining to do what I do? Anybody knows me knows this is the most joy I can have in my life is to help somebody. I got a letter this week. I'm going to read something to you. I got an email from a lady in Alaska. I'll just read part of it. Her name's Valerie. She said, I wrote you, she said, Hi David, I wrote you a few years ago after listening and finding your site, and at that time I was just starting to hear the message of the kingdom. I still write to your sister-in-law Cindy, that's Lois, the sister in Florida. Said, these messages have literally changed my life. I cannot tell you how much, exclamation points. I have wholeheartedly embraced the messages and slowly am becoming free. You know what that's worth? You know what that statement was worth to me? More than any amount of money anybody could give me. More than a $1,000 suit, I guarantee you that. See, somebody's life has changed. This woman, I know some things about her because we talked years ago. And when she first sent me a letter, you know what she said? And she didn't know if I understood it, but I did. She said, could anything good come out of West Portsmouth? What did they say about Jesus? Could anything good come out of Nazareth? I knew what she was saying, and that's what she meant. And we talked after that on the phone several times. But she has a handicapped son who is virtually in a vegetated state, and she's taking care of him from that, and he's pretty well up there now. I don't know what his age is now. He might be 20, 25 years. All these years, she takes care of every need he has. And she's bound up in that cold, barren place in Alaska. But she's faithful to take care of her son. That shows me there's a character in her that most people don't possess. And God will deal with her as He wants to deal with her. And that's what she's hearing. She's getting free. She's not bound up by all the religious garbage. And it's been several years ago. It's probably been 5 or 6 years ago that we started to communicate. But some wonderful things, when those things come, those mean more than all the money in the world. When you know you helped somebody get free. Nope, you can't put them on a Visa card. Can't put them in your bank. But what I can do is this. The book says, lay up your treasures in the spirit realm where the moths can't corrupt and the thieves can't break through and steal it. And they can't steal them. They can't steal them. I'm telling you right now, them are safe. And I got a few of them, I know that. So that's my pride and joy that I have helped somebody. My pleasure is to help people. Okay, where to leave off? 9? Okay, 10. But none says, where is God my maker who gives what? Now, in the night. Now, it says give song in the night. The word night here literally means in the midst of adversity. Said, but even these people that's being oppressed are not crying out, where is my God that makes me sing songs or gives me joy in the midst of all the adversity of life? I have, many times people have said to me and Lois, you guys never have a problem. We just have joy in the midst of the adversity, that's all. See, we have peace in the midst of it. See, if I have peace, it's not because no one's bothering me. Peace means nobody can bother me. Do you understand that? I tell people all the time, you can't offend me. I don't care what you do. Take your best shot. You're not going to offend me. I'll still feel pain. I'll feel rejection, but you're not going to offend me. You're not going to take me off my course because of making me mad at you. I'm not giving up the peace that God gave me. So they can all say I'm crazy. It doesn't make any difference. They told Jesus He was crazy. I'm in pretty good company. I've traveled that road a long time ago, many times. I'm not going to accept it, see? The only thing that can affect you is what you let affect you. If you let someone say something and hurt you and take you off your course, it's because you let them. They have no power over you. This book says in Luke 11, you have power over all the power of the enemy. You will tread on serpents and scorpions, demons, devils, and nothing by any means shall hurt you. When he said you'll tread on demons and devils, he's talking about thought processes, accusations, condemnation, guilt. You can walk on them. You can walk over top of them, and they can't hurt you. They have no effect on you because you got your mind right. That's what it's all about. It's all in here, in the mind. Get that mind right. I hear Teresa every time I hear that. You got to get your mind right. Teresa, you listen to this one? You need to get your mind right. She needs to get her mind right too. Okay, we love her. Verse 11. Who gives you adversity in the midst of all this? He gives you songs or joy in the midst of all this adversity. Who teaches us more than the beasts of the earth? Who teaches us? God teaches us more than the beasts of the earth. He says, I'm going to go away and send you another comforter, John 14:26, and he shall teach you all things whatsoever I've said to you. He'll call to remembrance all things whatsoever I've said to you. It's the Holy Spirit, the Spirit that makes you alive, the very thing that gives you the ability to breathe and speak and think and see and do all the things you do. That's the one that's going to teach you. How's he going to teach you? Any way he wants to. Any way he wants to. It's his call. He purchased us. He can make it any way he wants to. Not bound up by rules and regulations. And he said, more than the beasts of the earth. You know what the beasts of the earth he's talking about? Carnal thoughts, the man. Okay? The thoughts of humanity. Men can't teach you. I cannot teach you anything. I can help you remember what God wrote in your heart before the foundation of the world. When somebody says something, when I say something to you and you realize it's the truth, you hear it inside of you before these ears hear it here. And when I say it, it's a witness to what you heard inside of you by the Spirit of God. That's the truth. If I'm teaching you something you've never heard, you're not hearing God. Because you've got to hear God in you first. And then what I say should be a witness, to give you a witness of what God is telling to tell you. You hear what I'm saying? It's not about the man. It's about the Spirit of God. Okay. And he makes us wiser than the fowls of the sky. What's the fowls of the sky? It's still the beast, the thought processes of the mind. See, the high elevated thoughts of humanity that think they know so much. What do they really know? Nothing. They know nothing. They might know how to take oil out of the ground and make gasoline and diesel fuel and make all kinds of medicines, but they know nothing about the Spirit of God. That's all they're working in is carnal human things, but they know nothing of the Spirit of God. I'm glad that God put people on the earth that's smarter than I am, that know more than I am, than I know about all these things. There's technology of electronics, computers, internet, medicines, surgeries that keep you going. I'm glad God put all that out there. But I'm not caught up in it. I'm not entangled with the affairs of the world. I am free. And when you're free, I'll tell you what you'll do to other people. You will intimidate them. They're very uncomfortable around you because misery loves company. And they got them chains of bondage on them clanging, and they want them on you. They don't want to get free like you. They want to drag you into the pit with them. You know what? I ain't going there. I can say I ain't because I'm a hillbilly. I can do that. I'm not going there, see? I don't care what they do. I can help them out, but I'm not going in to sit with them. They got to come out with me. From there, they cry from the fowls of the heaven and the earth. That's the thoughts of humanity. They cry or cry out for help, but he does not respond because of the presence of what? Pride and arrogance of evil. The pride and arrogance of evil. He said, I don't respond to someone's crying out when they're full of pride and arrogance and evil thoughts. He said, I don't respond to that. But when someone cries out in humility and a broken spirit, God's right there to take care of it. He was there all along. He's just not going to respond to the other cries. Had a discussion with a lady one time, and I told her, I said, God doesn't hear what you say. And she got so mad. She was a Catholic lady. She lived pretty close to where Tom does. He knows who I'm talking about. And she got so angry with me. I mean, If looks could have killed, she'd have beheaded me right on the spot. Don't you tell me. I said, lady, I'm just telling you what the book says. He don't respond. He answers. I said, a blind hog will find an acorn in the woods once in a while. You know, you say enough words, one of them's going to come around sooner or later. That don't mean God's paying attention to what you're doing. You just stumbled onto something. But God wants something out of our lives. He wants a change. Just like someone said this morning, you know, the gospel demands a change in our lives. We can't sit in that same comfortable location. That was Emma that said it. We can't sit in that same comfortable place all of our lives. Sooner or later, we have to learn. We're going to keep going around that mountain, keep going through that test and through that test until we learn something. When we learn that test, then we can step up to the next one. It's a progressive thing. We learn this one, now I got that one, now I can go on and learn something else. But I got to learn that first one first. I can't learn the rest of them until I learn the first one. Then I'll be all right. It's just a progression. We'll all go through it. Surely God will not hear. And that word hear right there is the word shama. It means hear with the intent to respond. God will surely not hear with the intent to respond to vanity. Isn't that very clear? He'll hear it, but he just won't respond to it. God's not deaf. He doesn't turn his ears off. He hears everything, but he's not going to respond to vanity. Neither will the Almighty regard it. Let me read you something, an understanding of that verse 12. This is the way I understand it first. I want to back up a minute, something there. From here they cry for help, but he does not respond because of the presence of evil and pride and arrogance. That's the way it should literally be said by the language. I'd written it down at the bottom of my page here, and I wasn't even paying attention to it, and I just saw that, and I want to go back and read it off to you. And it says again, from there they cry out for help, and that's when the trouble they're in the earth, for help, but he does not respond because of the presence of evil and pride and arrogance. Yep. Mm-hmm. These six things. Proverbs 6 is where it's at. Okay. Verse 14. Though because you say you shall not see him, yet judgment is in his presence. It's the word panim. It's in his presence. Judgment is before him or in God's presence. How are we judged? By standing in the presence of God, somebody's going to be the brighter light. Now, who would you think it might be? It's like sitting in this room right now, and we have these fluorescent light bulbs overhead, and they're only about, I don't know how many watts, 40-watt bulbs, something like that. And a 40-watt bulb, if somebody come in and replaced all of them with 1,000-watt bulbs and turned them on, and left these right beside them, just put 1,000-watt bulbs beside them, and left those 40 watts on, could you find the 40-watt bulbs? It would just be overpowered, and that's what God's saying. He is overpowering with his brilliance and understanding and his enlightenment, and whatever we think we know, when we stand in God's presence, it'll all pass away. It's not that God's going to punish us. It's just you won't even be able to find it in his presence. It'll be just gone. What does light do to darkness? It goes away. Where did darkness go? Now, you know there's such a thing as darkness because we can all see it and feel it and look at it, can't we? You turn light. Where did that darkness go? See, the light consumed it. And that's what God is doing with us. He's consuming all that stuff. Didn't it say Jesus became the sin offering? He took the sin upon himself. He was the light that came into the world that lights every man that comes into the world. He came as a light and consumed the darkness. So simple, the light fixture. We can see it. He did just that very thing. Now, if he consumed the darkness, then why would I be condemned about darkness? I'll just ask a few questions and make people think, and you'll make them hurt. You'll make them hurt, okay? Therefore, the last of verse 14, therefore, trust you in him. That doesn't say it right. It literally says, the NAS says it right. The New American Standard says it. You must wait for him. Doesn't say you must wait. It said you must wait for him. Don't get in a hurry. God will change what he wants to change. See, man tells you, you got to do this right now or else. And the book says, wait on God. He'll do what he wants when he wants it. It's his timing plan. It's his plan. It's his purpose. And it will prevail according to his word. What do I have to worry about? Live your life, enjoy what God has given you, and go on with your life. Don't listen to what people tell you. See? What's it say in the New King James? Right. That's what the book of the language says. You must wait for him. New King James and New American Standard both says the same thing. Verse 15. But now, because it's not so, he has visited us in his anger. He said, just because we don't see it, we see anger. We see God is angry because he didn't respond in his love like he says he's going to. Okay? Did God say when he was going to do it? Let me show you a pattern. If he spoke to them and told them exactly how it was going to be at the end, they would not have believed it, would they? He has to speak it in the manner he speaks it because it's for each individual person as you live your life. He was speaking to us before we were on this earth. This was written before we were here, but it's speaking to us because it's by Spirit. If he'd spoke the totality of it to them, it would never have got any further than there. But he spoke it for whole humanity, and the way he wrote it, it's judged and put away as being permanent for all. That's the way God spoke it. It's permanent for all. He'll take care of everything. Who's in control of all things? So he takes care of it. It's judged, set away. God said, that's the end of it. I've settled this whole thing. It's finished. Now, what can I add to that? Only thing I can add to it is confusion and guilt and condemnation. I cannot change one thing God did. I can only, if I choose to believe in my mind that God didn't do what he said, and most people don't believe what God said because they've never heard what God said. They've heard what a preacher said. Whether it's man or woman makes no difference. Somebody has told them something. You know what? People have heard, I think Tom used the expression this morning, my mom told me that or my grandma told me that and that couldn't be wrong. Are you kidding me? Just because it's a grandma makes you mean you're infallible? Because you're a mother or a father, you're infallible? No. Everyone can make mistakes. And we are swayed by the words of everybody around us. Huh? The beasts of the earth. The beasts of the earth. The thought processes of other people sways us. Because humanity loves to be accepted. We don't like to be different to the point that we're not accepted, we're ostracized. So we try to fit in. So we'll compromise what is right to be accepted. That's the nature of humanity. But you know what? I can't do that. I've been kind of different all my life. I knew it. Didn't know why. But I never fit in. I mean, I would be right to the verge of it and then just wouldn't come to pass. It was like, you know, what am I doing wrong? So the condemnation come. And yet inside of me when I was a little kid, I said, I know there's something about me that's different from other people. And I know I've been told that all my life, but not in the way that they're telling me. Yeah, not the way that I know inside of me. I know that I have something in my life that God is using me for, but I didn't understand why I could never fulfill it in the natural, see? Why couldn't I be in a position of greatness and position of authority and power? But had I walked into that place, I'd never be in the place I am today, in control of my life. See, the only power and authority I have is in me. I don't have authority over anybody else. I don't have power over anybody else. The only authority that I can have in your life is what you choose to let me have. I can't take it from you. You have to agree to that. You have to accept it. If I tell you I have authority, does that mean I have authority? No. If I tell you I have authority, I can tell you this. Anyone tells you in your life they have a power and authority, you might as well get away from them because they ain't got none. They're trying to convince you and themselves that they got some. If they can get enough people following them, then they'll say, see, I told you, I got power and authority. Did Jesus ever tell anybody, hey, boys, get out of the way, I'm the one with all the power? He ever said? He just said, shh, don't tell nobody, just let it go. Don't have to prove a point to anybody, do we? Let it go. And whenever you recognize the authority in someone, then you honor that authority. You recognize that spirit in someone, you honor the spirit. Not the person, the spirit. Pure and simple. And see, that eliminates all the pride and arrogance of the person. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's not about me. I know a lot of things about the book. I know a lot of things about God. But that doesn't make me different than you, does it? I'm just like you. Jesus said, don't worship me. I'm your older brother. I'm going to tell you the same thing. You don't worship me. I'm just your elder brother. Simple as that. And I'm not embarrassed. I'm not ashamed I don't feel there's any arrogance or pride or anything else in knowing that he's my brother. You should know the same thing. He's your brother. We're all brothers and sisters. And my older brother is no better than I am. We are the same. See, when he created from the very beginning, that prototype, every other one's the same way. We're all the same. All got problems. We all got things to work through. But that's to bring us to understanding of the perfection God placed in us from the very beginning.